Yes, sir.
May it please the court. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Kirvin L. Taffer. I represent the appellant, Philip Turner. I'm requesting 5 minutes of my time reserved for rebuttal, please. The district court's final judgment against the appellant should be reversed and vacated, in this case remanded for further consideration by the district court. The district court addressed in its memorandum opinion only the issue of qualified immunity, none of the other issues raised. That's the issue before the court. The district court erred when it dismissed appellant's case on the pleadings, on the motions to dismiss, on the grounds that the officers were entitled to qualified immunity. The district court also erred when it held that appellant had not demonstrated that any of the actions of appellees violated any clearly established statutory or constitutional rights of Mr. Turner, or that any action taken by appellees were objectively unreasonable. I'll initially address the Fourth Amendment right not to be seized without reasonable suspicion based on specific and articulable objective facts showing that a person had committed, was committing, or was about to commit a crime. Then I'll address the clearly established First Amendment right of freedom of speech to gather information, for example by videotaping, of actions of public figures, including the police, especially from public sidewalks, a traditional form for expression of rights. In its memorandum opinion in this case, the district court did not mention any case law whatsoever with regard to Fourth Amendment and merely made one conclusion as follows. The risk to public officials.
We know what he said. Police can come up and question anyone with no level of suspicion. They can question anybody. What are you doing here?
That's not our issue in this case.
I know it's not, but so they the amended complaint says they came up to say, hey, what are you doing? So at some point, it has to be that the amended complaint indicates that it turned into an investigative detention for which they would need reasonable suspicion, right? And
yes,
you're saying that the following factors don't equate to reasonable suspicion. Individual filming the front of a police station, individual refuses to identify who he is, individuals on a pedestrian way, and as the district judge pointed out, targeted killings of police in the time. Why wouldn't that be reasonable suspicion just based on Terry alone, that the person could be casing this police station?
Well, for multiple reasons, Your Honor. Number one, the defendant was told that he was detained before he even refused to identify himself. So, number two,
He was told he was detained, but was he physically restrained in any way at that point?
It doesn't have to be. For detention, it just has to be made clear that he's not able to leave. He was told more than once that he was detained by the police.
For them to do a little more investigation because it looks like he's casing the police station.
Well, Your Honor, the problem with that is in Terry, the police cased the issue before they detained the defendant. They observed the defendant they thought looking suspicious, so they watched him for 20 minutes, watched him talk to another individual and looking at stores that might be the subject of robbery. In this case, they didn't.
Just thinking of them, two young officers, again, in the context of targeted killings, why don't they think, well, he's casing and pointing a camera at the security entrance to our police station. Won't be a robbery, but it could be reasonable suspicion enough to investigate that he's going to help an escape.
Your Honor, I don't believe you can kill someone with a video camera, and the fact...
I didn't say kill, help an escape, you know, film how the doors open or not.
Well, that would require the police to know what he was planning, what was in his brain.
Well, that's why Terry allows a very minimal seizure for them to do a little bit more inquiry.
Well, no, but in Terry, they did the investigation before they detained the person.
But the amended complaint says there was another police call about him. Other people had already noticed him. There was some other call, if I remember, that the amended complaint acknowledges about, hey, there's a guy across the street filming us.
That's not a crime, Your Honor.
I'm not saying it's a crime, but it could be criminal activity afoot to justify a narrow detention. Or if not, what's your best case?
My best case is Brown, Hibble, and the most recent case decided by this court in Gonzalez versus Huerta, very similar facts to this case.
That's at a school though, right?
That's right, but the court said Brown was not controlling because it was in a school zone, and Texas had a law that people in a school zone have to identify themselves. In that case, a mixed message was sent to the police by the state of Texas by having a law that says you have to identify yourself, even though in other locations, the law was that you only have to identify yourself after you have been arrested. Now, in this case, the state of Texas did not send a mixed message to the police officers. In fact, the year before this case, the state of Texas had sent a very clear message to the police officers that videoing is not suspect activity. In a case that we mentioned in our brief, but not for this point, In re Ex Parte Ronald Thompson, 442 Southwest 2nd, 325, we mentioned it in the First Amendment part of the brief about an established right to video the police. In that case, the state of Texas had a statute which would make it criminal in some instances to videotape adult people in public. The Supreme Court ruled that that law was, the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals ruled that law was unconstitutional, violating the First Amendment. And further, in that case, at the end of the opinion on page 351, delivered a clear message to police that it found it incredulous that reasonable suspicion could arise from taking photographs, by implication videotaping, in public places, and stated that taking photographs of people in public places is not suspicious, unusual, or criminal. If the police could stop people for videotaping on this public street for items in public view under this analysis, then they could stop anyone, anywhere.
Well, but there's very different between people and even police activity arrests than it is filming a military base or getting too close to a polling station. Buffer zones have been allowed in various contexts.
There's no law allowing a buffer zone for a public building such as a police station.
Such as a police station, that's all we're looking at. So you're saying filming the jail, the entrance to a jail, filming the entrance to a police station has no higher consideration in a reasonable suspicion analysis?
Well,
the location and the security interests don't factor in at all?
I'm not saying they don't factor in at all, but they would factor in the same as an allegation such as in Hill that crime occurred in other areas similar to this.
I would think, though, a high crime area would be a factor that would justify a little more investigation. I don't want to detain that point. To me, you've got a secondary argument on the Fourth Amendment that at some point the investigation turned into a de facto arrest for which they would need probable cause. That's hard for me to see, accepting the allegations as true. So I guess here's the way I would phrase that as a question. What's your best case that by putting him in the trooper car, putting up the windows and saying, we're going to make you sweat, again, accepting the allegations, that somehow is not an arrest?
I contend it is an arrest.
You do. And what's your best case? Because we have a lot of uncertain law about how long police can put people in cars still pending the traffic stop, the reasonable suspicion. So what's your best case? This turned into an arrest.
My best case is, Your Honor, is that the pleadings show, and these are not contested, that Mr. Turner was unarmed, that it was obvious from his attire that he was unarmed, that it was obvious that he didn't have access to a weapon because he wasn't in an automobile. He was walking alone wearing a pair of shorts and a t-shirt. No weapon, no access to a weapon. Further, the pleadings, which are uncontested, were that he was not aggressive. He was not challenging the police. Right. He was responding to their questions. They didn't like his responses, but he was responding. So he was not trying to run away. He took no acts that would cause.
So there's no criminal activity at the way beginning, even leading to reasonable suspicion. But you're saying there's zero, none at all to allow an arrest. That's your argument.
That's yes, Your Honor.
How long is a while? There was never a definition as to how much time he was placed into the police car. There's just an allegation that it was for a while. Is there any evidence as to how long it was?
He did not have on a watch, so he wasn't able to time it, Your Honor.
So the answer is no.
That's right. Now, with regard to the First Amendment, This court, in an en banc decision in Morgan versus Swanson, said that the Fifth Circuit looks to controlling authority or a robust consensus of persuasive authority that defines the contours of the right in question. In a issue not decided by Morgan versus Swanson, but reserved for later date, was whether and when a constitutional violation may be so obvious that its illegality is clear from only a generalized statement of the law. Appellant contends that there is controlling authority and that also this...
Controlling authority?
Yes, Your Honor.
Or other circuit authority?
Both.
What's controlling authority that clearly established that filming the police violates the First Amendment? What's the controlling authority?
Controlling authority is the Supreme Court authority regarding collecting information about public officials.
But the Third and the Fourth Circuits haven't said that that clearly established the right. The First Circuit did, but only by citing its own prior authority. Right? Am I correct?
Correct, Your Honor.
No, the Third Circuit Kelly decision, the Fourth Circuit, I can't pronounce it, Smecky decision, both said not clearly established. The First Circuit in Glick said yes because we said it before. Isn't that right or is that wrong?
That's not correct, Your Honor. I'm sorry, but...
No, it's fine.
The district court...
What's wrong about my recitation of the law?
Is that the district court completely ignored the 11th Circuit decision in Smith versus Cumming and Glick.
Glick, that's the First Circuit.
Oh, I'm sorry, the First Circuit decision in Glick. It wasn't recited by the Supreme Court, completely ignored it.
Right, also, the First Circuit relied on its own authority, so that would require you to point us to our prior authority that said filming the police is protected First Amendment. Where have we said that yet? I mean, this may be the right case to say it.
Well, first I would say it's the right case to say it.
But that's different than clearly established already.
Well, I would say that if you read the analysis in American Civil Liberties Union versus Alvarez.
That's the Seventh Circuit. Where have we said it?
I'm sorry, what, Your Honor?
Where has this court said it?
This court in 1982 adopted the Supreme Court precedent that you have a right to gather news by any means. It cited multiple examples. One of them involved films to gather news about public officials. And in that case, the court said the public has no less a right under the First Amendment to receive information about the operation of the nation's courts than it has to know how other governmental agencies work and to receive other ideas and information. Videotaping the police station is no less a method of determining how the police stations work.
The trouble is all around the country, the new apps, the ACLU stuff, the police watching, it's all new. And courts are struggling everywhere with the balance between public safety and your First Amendment right. Police haven't, may be our problem, but I don't see that in this circuit we've yet told police, you can be filmed anywhere, even the front door of your police station. I don't see that we've said that.
I agree they have not said that specifically, Your Honor.
Okay, well then these officers would probably get qualified immunity.
Your Honor, the as far as the... A robust authority of persuasive decisions, I would constitute that the decisions put forth by the appellees are not persuasive authority, and they involve different facts. In the Kelly case, it involved what the Supreme Court of the U.S. has defined as a dangerous situation, a police stop of a vehicle. In that case, one of the passengers in the vehicle was attempting to surreptitiously record what the police were doing. This case does not involve a dangerous situation. An unarmed person with only a video camera, obvious to the police, only a video camera, across the street from the station, standing there, walking up and down, publicly videotaping, did not approach the station, did not approach the police. They had to walk across the street to approach him, and they drove up and approached him without even observing anything, without taking the time to observe, as in the... Terry case, where the police officer took 20 minutes to observe what they were doing before he approached and detained
him. They find out he's armed when they pat him down.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Terry, they only found out. These police had a couple of tragic ambush killings of officers. The only way they're going to find out that he's unarmed is if they do what they did in Terry. Reasonable suspicion, detain, pat him down. Gun for Terry.
but they observed him to determine reasonable suspicion. In this case, the officers didn't do that. They drove up, immediately walked over and said, "What are you doing?" And it was obvious what he's doing. He was videotaping. And then they asked him, "Identify yourself." Before he even said, "I will not identify himself," they had detained him.
All right. Thank you, sir. You've determined some rebuttal time. Mr. East.
Good morning, and may it please the court. As the Supreme Court stated in Wilson versus Lane, if judges disagree on a constitutional question, it is unfair to subject police to money damages for picking the losing side of the controversy. Last month, I submitted a Rule 28J case from the Northern District of Texas where former Chief Judge Fitzwater, addressing a case on facts that he said were nearly identical to those in this case, and indeed they were. It was a plaintiff doing the exact same thing as this plaintiff, represented by the same attorney, enticing police officers to confront him while filming the secure parking facility and the comings and goings of police cars, was detained for
long. We don't know the facts of that case, but when you, it seems to me there's a robust case consensus over 30 years that police can't prolong a detention unless they're doing an investigation justified by reasonable suspicion. So the Fourth Amendment part is a lot more clear to me than the First Amendment.
Yes, and in the Sanders case, all of those issues, because all of them were present in that case, were addressed by Chief Judge Fitzwater, former Chief Judge.
This,
and he came to the same conclusion.
I don't even know the case Judge Fitzwater. I'm looking at Supreme Court law Sharp. So if we have to accept as true these allegations, and I've got the amended complaint right here, I'd love it if you could tell me what paragraph in the complaint reflects that these officers were taking any investigative steps while he's sitting in their car. So just tell me, in the complaint, what were the investigative steps they were taking while he's sitting in the car?
All the complaint says is that he was detained for a brief period in the car while a supervisor, who the complaint says was in the building next to them, showed up
for
moments.
What's the investigative purpose that the complaint alleges?
Seeking identity, Your Honor, which Supreme Court case after Supreme Court case after Supreme Court case.
Yeah, but you know, I'm sure you know, Texas law is not like Louisiana law. You cannot ask for an identity card under the Texas law after Texas v. Brown unless you can lawfully arrest them. That's different than...
It's not a crime under Texas law, but absolutely as part of the investigation, you can seek identity. It's not a crime for the...
But what's the crime justifying the detention? Like, in all these traffic stop cases where we agonize about how long they can keep him in the car, they're getting a dog because they have reasonable suspicion of drugs. They're going to do a show-up because they have reasonable suspicion of bank robbery. What in the allegation, only in the allegation, says that they were looking for what crime?
They were seeking his identity, Your Honor, as part
of... But that's not a crime under Texas law. What's the crime?
Nor was he arrested. This is part of the detention, Your Honor, that is justified by reasonable suspicion. And contrary to what was being said numerous times in the complaint, it says that the officers approached, asked them, "How's it going?" and asked them to identify himself. Mr. Turner kept videotaping, and Officer Reynolds repeatedly kept asking Mr. Turner if he had the ID with him. They didn't walk up and detain him before he refused to identify himself.
He doesn't have to identify himself under Texas law, correct?
He doesn't have to in order for it not to be a crime. It's
right.
Not.
So what's
that's a red
the crime
herring.
They have suspicion to detain him for?
It is a crime of perhaps terroristic activities, perhaps.
Where in his amended complaint does it suggest he was, they had, does, did they say to him, "We think you're a terrorist"?
Yes, they said, "We have concerns about what's going on outside of our facility."
That's not a crime. We have concerns.
Right, and you don't have to, under the Terry standard, identify a specific crime. You just have to have a reasonable suspicion under the totality of the circumstances.
That criminal activity is afoot. You have
that
to have
criminal activity may be afoot.
Right. And what you're saying that they had the criminal activity they were investigating was terrorism. If, do you agree we have to accept his allegations are true for the dismissal?
Yes.
Okay. He said, they said, "We're putting you in the car to make you sweat. This is what happens to people who don't give us ID." He said that. You're stuck with that at this stage. How can that possibly, in the last 30 years, justify an arrest or even a detention? To make you sweat.
Again, on the even accepting that standard, It is not relevant under qualified immunity law or Fourth Amendment law, the evil intentions or evil motive of the police officer.
30 years ago, the Supreme Court said you can't detain for punitive purposes. Sounds like make you sweat is punitive. Has to be for investigative. Our court over and over again has said there's got to be an investigative purpose once you detain. Bank robbery, whatever. And if we accept, it may be provable later on, but he says they were doing it to make him sweat.
So I have two answers to your question, Your Honor. One, under the Fourth Amendment, and I cite a case, U.S. v. Goodwin, out of the Seventh Circuit, which cites a number of Supreme Court cases, Indianapolis versus Edmond, Florida versus J.L., Illinois versus Lidster, where they say, in essence, there's a sliding scale. If the crime that's being concerned, that the officers are concerned about, is significant enough, the level of suspicion can be lower. And in this case, I would love to recount the history that I put forth in my brief, but I know you know it already, of what these officers were fearful of, including the events the very days before this happened.
That may be true, but we can't assume that. That's guessing. We have to take his allegations as true, that the officers come up and say to him, you won't give us ID? Okay. You're going to make you sweat.
No, what his complaint says is that when he refused to give ID repeatedly, the officer says, and he asked the officer, why are you detaining me? Or why are you arresting me? The officer says, we're not arresting you. We're not accusing you of a crime. We're simply detaining you to try to determine your identity. And under...
Okay, that doesn't work for Terry in Texas, under Texas law. They can't detain him to get his identity unless the only basis under Texas law you can get identity cards is if you have a lawful arrest.
Let me try again on that one, Your Honor. We're not arresting him for failing to identify under a statute. That's not what's going on.
You're not even admitting an arrest.
Under Terry, I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Just a detention.
Correct, Your Honor.
You said you're not arresting him. There never was.
No, there was never an arrest. Nor was there an allegation that crime had been committed for failing to identify.
What case is your best case there wasn't an arrest? Okay. Just give me a case anywhere close to these facts. He is not arrested.
Other than the Sanders case that I submitted with my 28J letter, Your Honor, the Heibel case, which analyzes the statute you're talking about.
Heibel is a stop and identify case.
Yes, Your Honor.
And the Supreme Court struck down.
But we're confused.
What's your best case just that you can put someone in a car, put up the windows, and keep them for any amount of time if the at a dismissal stage when no one says why? Just give me your case that says that's not an arrest.
One second. In United States versus Sharp, they stated that extending a detention in order to continue the purposes of the detention, especially in light of the fact that the suspect is refusing to cooperate, is causing the problem himself, they're not going to view that as a problem to extend the detention long enough to complete what was being sought there. And like Your Honor mentioned, bringing in a drug dog, bringing in a fingerprinting device has been held to be reasonable. Holding somebody long enough who won't identify himself to bring in a fingerprinting device.
The drug dog because there's reasonable suspicion of narcotics activity.
Yes.
What's the reasonable suspicion of what here?
Again, back to the reasonable suspicion is the reason they confronted him in the first place. There had been a call that he's outside of a police facility, videotaping the security gate and cars entering and leaving police officers in their private vehicle. No different than the reasons we don't allow videotaping in this very building, Your Honor, is for security concerns.
Then no one's saying he could go into the police station and film. But if you're standing across the street in Lafayette Square, you're telling me you could be detained for filming our courthouse?
If there is a gate through which the judges...
We have a front door. You're saying if someone's across the street on the sidewalk, the police can reasonably stick them in a trooper car and put the windows up?
If there is a security measure, that's why states are passing Homeland Security statutes.
Right, those are all time, place, and manner. Absolutely, right. The police could do that 300-foot buffer. That they didn't say that. We don't have that going on here. They never asked the man, could you move on?
But the reason those statutes are allowed is because the Fourth Amendment allows it. And what we're talking about here is the Fourth Amendment reasonableness of an officer conducting an investigation into something that he finds to be suspicious. Combined with the cases say evasive conduct, evasive answers, failing to identify can all contribute to the reasonable suspicion of an officer. And so when they approach him, they probably had reasonable suspicion at that point. Certainly when he acted evasively, refused to identify himself.
Evasively, the Supreme Court tells people, don't walk away, don't run, say as little as possible, and you can't get in trouble. What did he say that was evasive? He just said, he gave them the citation to the correct Texas law. He said, read your own law, 3801, I don't have to give you my identity. That's all he said. What's evasive about that?
3801 is a red herring, Your Honor. There is no allegation that he was being arrested.
So in his allegation, what did he do that was evasive? Give me the paragraph in the complaint.
He refused to cooperate with the investigation. He refused to identify himself. And if you have reasonable suspicion to detain somebody, you can continue that detention long enough to call in a fingerprint scanner. The law is clear that you can do that, Your Honor.
They can detain, the police can detain Texans who stand on the law and they say, you just got to wait till we get a fingerprint scanner because you didn't answer the question that the law says you don't have to answer? That's absurd.
If you have reasonable suspicion to investigate, Your Honor, if you have reasonable suspicion that there's drug activity, you can hold them long enough to call in a dog. If you have reasonable suspicion that there is crime afoot and you're seeking identity, which is a fundamental government interest.
On the First Amendment, how is this case different, moving to the First Amendment, how is this case any different than the abortion buffer zone case?
Before we leave the arrest, let me ask you, at which point did Turner request a supervisor?
Turner did not request a supervisor.
There's an allegation that he did, which is why Mr. Driver was called to come.
My understanding was that the officers who were out there trying to do their job, they were called to a scene and they were trying to figure out what was going on, didn't know what to do, and they called their supervisor for some further guidance. And all they did was approach Mr. Turner and say, look, we're not accusing you of a crime necessarily. We're not saying you're under arrest. We're just trying to figure out what's going on. He didn't cooperate. They said, well, hold on. They put him in the car. They called the supervisor, who in the complaint, plaintiffs admit, came immediately, that the detention was very brief. When Lieutenant got there, he interviewed everybody, decided, well, okay, whether he had the right to detain him any longer or not, whether he had the right to call in a fingerprint scanner or not, under these facts, we'll let him go. But these officers were just trying to figure out what was going on, and that's when they called the supervisor, is my understanding.
But trying to figure out what's going on isn't trying to solve a crime. And I thought the facts as to Driver was he shows up, then he's, according, I mean, the allegations may be untrue, but I thought Turner at least alleges that Driver says, you're right, but then he doesn't release them. He goes back to the others and talks. So the guy's still detained. Isn't that the allegation?
I might have missed your question, Your Honor.
Driver shows up, the supervisor, and he at some point talks to Turner, and he says, you're right, at least Turner says he said that.
Oh, he did say
and
that.
Then he didn't release them. So that sounds like personal involvement. He has knowledge and he acquiesces in the detention.
He alleges that Driver said that.
But we have to accept the allegation is true.
And then Driver released them. Or the
well, officer. He went and talked to his colleagues. I mean, you may think that's not a significant amount of time, but the law doesn't give him that opportunity, at least at a dismissal stage.
I do want to say that Mr. Galindo will address Lieutenant Driver.
On the First Amendment, how is this any different than the unanimous Supreme Court telling Massachusetts, you can't restrict people's sidewalk activity, however dislikable and dangerous it might be?
I don't know that it went that far, Your Honor, but the difference here is that under the circumstances, as the courts have said, the times as they exist and the recent attacks on not just police, but police stations themselves, an attack on Dallas with high caliber weapons and pipe bombs in the recent months, had police on high alert. They see somebody out there filming a secured gate through which they drive their personal automobiles, have questions, approach him, question him, and detain him for just long enough to try to figure out his identity.
The First Amendment, is your position there is no First Amendment right? It's like obscenity, it's like a true threat, or that there is, we should do what all the other circuits that I'm aware of have done and said there is, but it wasn't clearly established for your clients. Which of the two are you arguing?
Well, the First Amendment's interesting. Certainly, for purposes of my clients, it's not clearly established in this circuit, and that's the end
of story.
That's the end of it as far as my clients.
Is there any circuit law that has said that why shouldn't we make it clear now to help police and everyone understand that as of now, it is a right?
Well, I think that's an interesting question, but what does it mean, especially in the facts of this case? Like you mentioned, this is not a case where somebody's out filming police activity in the typical sense. He wasn't interested in filming the as it turns out, the security gate per se. He was interested in what reaction he would get, and that's what he cared about. And there is, interestingly, a line of cases, and they cite one of them. They cite a case out of New York called Higginbotham, and it alludes to, and there's another more specific case called Fields versus City of Philadelphia, 166 F sup 3rd 528, which talks about a line of cases that says filming in and of itself is not necessarily expressive conduct, even if you're filming the police. If you're filming the police as a matter of protest or as a matter of criticism, then that's expressive conduct. But if all you are, as he refers to himself as, and that's the word the case uses, is a hobbyist out there rolling film, that in and of itself is not necessarily expressive conduct. So to have a rule that all filming of all police at all times, I think that goes broader than any rule that has been enunciated so far, and I think you do have to look at the circumstances of the case before you come up with a rule. With that, Mr. Galindo will speak. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, sir.
May it please the court, Luis Galindo, appearing for Lieutenant Driver. When Lieutenant Driver arrived on the scene, he encountered Turner, already handcuffed and sitting in the back of a patrol car. Lieutenant Driver concurs with the judgment of the district court and the argument made by Mr. East that the officer's detention of Turner did not violate any of Turner's clearly established constitutional rights, and two, that the officer's actions were at all times objectively reasonable, and that is why they're entitled to qualified immunity. With respect to Lieutenant Driver, the complaint states that after arriving on the scene, instead of immediately releasing Turner, Lieutenant Driver continued this unlawful detention. Lieutenant Driver does not believe that the officer's detention of Mr. Turner was unlawful. And for the arguments presented by Mr. Reason in our briefs, notably though, at page 16 of his reply brief, Turner now concedes that Lieutenant Driver's actions, when he did not immediately release Turner, but instead conducted an investigation of the facts, were, quote, unquestionably reasonable actions of a supervisor. Although it is not contained anywhere in the complaint, at page 14 in his reply brief, Turner now apparently has abandoned his pleadings and would tell the court that his claim is that Lieutenant Driver, his actions took time to investigate, were unreasonable because he asked too many questions. He should have stopped and just released him instead of asking more questions, which is what he did, according to the complaint.
If we're just looking at the complaint, which again, Judge McBride, he entered a one-sentence ruling on all of this, right?
Yes, he did.
And no cited no authority, Fourth or First Amendment.
That's correct.
So if we have to take the allegations as true, paragraphs 40 to 43 say that Lieutenant Driver came out and talked to the colleagues. They delayed, seemingly ignored Mr. Turner, left him to sweat for a while. Finally, they rolled the window down. Turner was lying down on the seat, exhausted. Lieutenant Driver asked Turner if he had any ID on him. Turner said he did not have to ID himself because he hadn't been lawfully arrested. Do you agree with me that that is the law in Texas? You don't have to give an ID unless you've been lawfully arrested?
Well, perhaps, Your Honor. And let me just answer it this way, because I think as long as there is reasonable suspicion, and I think that is Brown and what the Supreme Court in Texas did in Brown, or what the Supreme Court did with Brown, was saying, look, you cannot arrest somebody just because he failed to provide identification, which was the Texas law. They struck that down. We understand that. But we've moved past that. And I think the cases that we cite in our brief talk about the
Who's
fact
moved
we've moved past
that.
The Supreme Court has moved past that in the analysis saying, if you have reasonable doubt, or if reasonable suspicion.
And that's why Louisiana has a law that allows you to be arrested if during reasonable suspicion detention you don't. But Texas never changed its law.
But we did not.
So the police
was not arrested, Your Honor. He was
still. Do you agree with me that if he's got an arrest, there's a problem here? There's no probable cause. If we construe this to be an arrest.
If it is an arrest, Your Honor, then there was no probable cause stated anywhere in the
record. That gets back to why, for your client, it's different, because if we would have to additionally say that the allegations show personal involvement, I was going to continue to read. Lieutenant Driver replied to Mr. Turner, "You're right." But then he leaves him in the back seat. He goes to talk to the others. That's a difficulty accepting the allegations from me. Once he says, "You're right," he knows and acquiesces in an ongoing detention.
And then, Your Honor, we need to go back and look at what the court has said in terms of pleadings. Nowhere in their complaint, and I think Judge Clement has pointed that out, have they told us how long did this take? I think the officers have the opportunity to investigate, and I think clearly if you look at what they have pleaded with respect to Lieutenant Driver, he acted diligently in doing his investigation, and that is—
You heard my difficulty with your co-counsel. Those laws that allow the police to temporarily detain all assume that there's investigative steps, but accepting his allegation, it's punitive. They're punishing him. They're not doing an investigation for any identified crime.
Well, Your Honor, with respect to Lieutenant Driver, let's just look at the complaint.
I know. With the driver, it's different. I agree. Okay.
And what we're saying is, with respect to Lieutenant Driver, what they have pleaded is that he came to the scene, he asked questions of the officers, he questioned Turner, he went back and talked to the officers, yeah. He came back and talked to Turner, and he was released. What is absent in this complaint is that they have not pleaded the time it took to do that, and that it was excessive, and it was not within the scope that was reasonable for the purpose of his detention, which was to investigate what had happened. Okay. And I think with Lieutenant Driver's actions clearly fall when it was permissible under the U.S. Supreme Court law that exists today as far as investigatory stops. And their pleadings show that he acted diligently in going forward, investigating the facts, and then what happens? He releases him. End of story.
Right. It's just
and I think it's very difficult to say, well, he violated his constitutional rights. Yeah. The only other thing they've talked about is that he lectured him. And again, the pleadings completely are bereft of.
Hey, once you say again, then you're repeating and you have a red light. So thank you, sir.
I'm fine. Thank you.
You have some rebuttal time? Let me ask you, Mr. East referred to a factually similar case before Judge Fitzwater. How many of these video situations has your client participated in? Is he trying to make new law, trying to make a point?
Your Honor, I agree my client is trying to make a point, not make new law, but make a point that the law is clear that videotaping is not a crime.
So he's not an artist. He's not just videoing the building so that he can go paint it or something. He's trying to make a legal statement that it's all right for him to video police officers coming and going in their private cars.
Yes, Your Honor, that's true. He even posts the videos on the internet.
How many other cases are there?
Pending right now, there is one other case just filed in Austin. There was a previous case filed in Austin against the city of Round Rock, and that was one of the cases whose decision we cited on the motion to dismiss as clearly established law. It involved facts that occurred before this case. The decision did not come out until after this case, but in that case, Judge Pittman in the Western District decided there was a clearly established right to videotape the police and that there was a clearly established right not to be detained without reasonable suspicion based upon specific unarticulable objective facts.
Did any of those cases involve your client?
Yes, Your Honor. The two cases I mentioned both involved my client. As far as
the lawyer in all three cases.
I'm sorry. Yes, Your Honor. The other case in Dallas they cited is a different client. I was also the lawyer in that case. That client decided he did not want to appeal. The case was not totally dismissed. In that case, the court decided that he had pled an allegation of excessive force. The decision in that case he was talking about as far as First Amendment relied and Fourth Amendment relied heavily on the judge's decision in this case. So it just continued the decision in this case. As far as
your brief didn't go into personal involvement by Driver, which the law's a little unclear. It's to me a very close call. And let's assume you have two officers who come out, they're confused, they don't know the Texas stop and identify law, they sure don't like someone filming, so they detain him, which is a difficult, whether the detention moves into an arrest is something we've been discussing, but then along comes Driver and he just says, okay, the guy's technically right. So that's a harder one to see where the district court erred on the Fourth Amendment to me.
Well, as far as Driver is concerned, Your Honor, it's the fact that he did not, when he first, as my briefs show, when he first came out, he talked to the officers. At that point, he had the opportunity to learn that they were just trying to identify himself at that point. And then he went and talked to Mr. Turner. Mr. Turner said, I don't have to. And he said, you're right. He could have released Mr. Turner. He did not.
But he said in your, and I don't remember the briefs that well, he said you abandoned that proposition and you actually commended Driver for, in your brief.
That's not correct, Your Honor. Not at all.
He quoted a portion of your brief.
That's incorrect. We have not abandoned that position. We addressed that position in the original brief. In the reply brief, I don't believe we focused on that position. But no, we have never abandoned that position. There's nothing in the brief that even remotely says we're abandoning that position. As far as
the police in this country are very, very busy dealing with real crimes, and I think it's sort of astounding that you would participate in setting up these sort of fake scenarios.
It's not a fake scenario, Your Honor. My client believes that he has a First Amendment right to videotape the police. They accused him of entrapment. He's not a government agent. He's a private citizen. They can't entrap the government. They're supposed to know the law.
Well, it could be seen both ways, but fundamentally, the filming, the police are forever asking citizens to film, like the Boston Marathon bombing, police activity, it's chaotic. These photographs actually help police a lot more than hurt them. I'm unaware of any case where it's hurt the police. It exonerates good cops, it catches the bad cops, and most of all, it catches the bad guys. So if you're filming police arresting someone and there's some cooperator in the shadows, the citizen photographs are suddenly very helpful and necessary.
I agree, Your Honor, and that's why the argument put forward by these gentlemen is totally wrong and is not logical. They're arguing that they had reasonable suspicion because other police stations in other cities had been attacked. Nowhere did they say that police station had been attacked. Nowhere did they say a police station in Tarrant County had been attacked. And I doubt that any of those attacks were made by people with video cameras. They were made by people with weapons. They could see, it's pled, that they could obviously see before they approached him, he was unarmed. He was wearing shorts and a t-shirt and carrying just a video camera.
All right, therefore, thank you. You have your red light. The argument. We'll be in recess until 11:30 when we have another case.